Welcome to Popcorn Optional, the weekly movie podcast where we review movies and just kind of have fun, because that's what we like to do. We like to have fun. My name is Cameron Salina. I'm here with my two co-hosts, Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
What up?
What up?
And instead of reviewing a new movie this week, what we're going to be doing is we are going to be reviewing Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight Trilogy. I hope everybody's familiar with this. We're going to kind of just jump right in and give you our general thoughts on the movies, go into deep, deep, deep spoilers, spoil everything. So if you haven't seen these movies, just don't listen, please. And if you haven't seen them, the third one came out 5 years ago now, so please go watch them. They're fantastic.
If you haven't seen these, like, where the hell have you been? Like, just go.
You could be one of those people that just, like, hates DC.
They're so all, like, $5. They're all, like, $5 at Target and worth the $5.
Paid off way more than my Skechers investment.
Awesome. All right, well, we're going to jump right into the very first movie, Batman Begins. This movie is, at least in my opinion, the perfect origin story for a character. It's the example that people have used every day. I feel like every single day I see something new that goes, oh yeah, we're wanting to do something in the vein of Batman Begins as far as setting up this character. What Christopher Nolan was able to do with this first movie is nothing short of a miracle. After what Warner Brothers had just done with Superman Returns, it's kind of amazing to think about how much he was allowed to get away with, how he was able to craft this movie as his own, which you can certainly feel in the sense of how there's that non-linear editing. It's a full-on Christopher Nolan movie. It's really his first big budget movie. This is, for the longest time, this was my favorite Dark Knight trilogy movie. What are your guys' general thoughts on Batman Begins?
So for me, this isn't my favorite of the Batman movies, but I would definitely agree with you that this is by far and away the best origins story, comic book, superhero, whatever. And one thing I really just kind of want to like point out is just how crazy it is that this movie got made the way it did, kind of how you were saying, Cameron, because if we all remember, just like 8 years before this movie came out was Batman and Robin, you know?
Boo.
The wonderful movie that is. And so this shouldn't have came out, and this shouldn't have happened the way it did. It's just like a totally different take on not only the genre as a whole, but that specific character. Film did not treat Batman well. One thing I will say though is that this came out after the first X-Men and first Spider-Man movie. And so we were kind of like beginning of the comic renaissance. A lot of people point to this movie as being like, this is the movie that started the renaissance of comic book movies. And while I will say that it was definitely like the high point of the renaissance of comic book movies starting whatever, definitely wasn't the first. But this movie is incredible. I love this movie. It's a top-notch comic book movie, top-notch cast. The thing I love about it is it's not a comic book movie. If for some reason, like, Bruce Wayne wasn't dressed up as Batman and he was just like some crazy guy running around in the streets, this would still be a good movie. So, this is a great film. Trevor, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It is a great film. It works. Like you said, you could change all the characters' names, change the outfit, and it still works. Batman is one of the great characters, but this film is not even reliant on Batman and the Batman mythology that was already built. A couple things going on here. One, I know we talk about this being kind of in the middle of the comic book renaissance. I think the first couple Spider-Man even maybe had come out by then. Something like that, the first couple X-Men. But I feel like this changed what a comic book movie can be. Like, this really defined the genre in a lot of ways. I think laid the groundwork for a lot of what Marvel is doing, even though Marvel hasn't quite hit maybe the realism of what this film does. And then the last thing, I guess, in my overview is, this was not, usually we see in the past comic book movies were hired directors like Tim Burton or Joel Schumacher, who'd kind of done this like weird off the wall kind of oddball stuff. And in this case, they hired Christopher Nolan, who's like, I mean, a real director who does, I mean, regular films. I don't know, not necessarily regular.
He had done,
I mean,
Memento and Insomnia was the other, I guess, studio film that he did before this. A lot of people say that Insomnia was a test from Warner Brothers just to see how he would handle higher caliber actors, because Robin Williams, Al Pacino are in that. It's definitely a lot different than Following, which was a student film, and Memento, which was his technically first film.
Right. And the other thing here is that instead of hiring someone to be the lead who's like good looking or fits the bill, they hired Christian Bale, who's like a total legit actor, had been an American Psycho and The Machinist and been absolutely terrifying. And has shown since then that he can really do anything in any role. And especially like what he does in The Fighter and some other movies, he was a different kind of person to cast in a superhero movie, I guess, Patrick Stewart notwithstanding.
It is interesting to see that if you watch The Machinist or Machinist, however you want to say it, and then watch this, those are the two movies he filmed back to back. So he filmed The Machinist when he was 120 pounds and then put on 100 pounds to film Batman Begins. Super impressive what that guy, I mean, say what you will about him as an actor, super impressive what he's willing to go through in order to play certain characters. Even American Hustle, where he puts on a bunch of weight. Not a great movie, but what he's willing to go through to get into that role. So, one of my big things, and one of the reasons why I love this, is something that you guys have both hit into a little bit, and it's that this isn't necessarily even a Batman movie. This is a Bruce Wayne movie. This is Bruce Wayne to the max. When you look at the breakup as far as time in this movie, Batman doesn't actually appear at the docks, which is the first technical Batman scene, until an hour into the movie. The movie's 140 minutes long, so I mean, you're giving a pretty good amount of time before he's actually in there. Batman only actually appears for 24 minutes on screen, 17% of the movie. It's insane to think how much Christopher Nolan is able to do with so little actual Batman. And I think the reason why it works so well is because all of the origin that we get for Batman is beyond fascinating. And it sets up everything to come later in the movie. Like, we don't just leave the League of Shadows and never talk about it again in the movie. It's constantly with him. You can see the influence directly on his actual costume with the wrist things that he wears that have the blades on them. And it even comes back in the form of Ra's al Ghul and the League of Shadows trying to destroy Gotham in the third act of the movie. So everything that he's doing in this movie has purpose. It sets up parts that go way beyond this movie. I mean, there are things in this movie that set up The Dark Knight Rises in certain aspects. And so I don't know if that was always his plan, but this movie's just so precise in everything that it does. And that's so impressive to see from an origin story where there could be so much fluff. There could be so much meandering around cool action set pieces, but they really take time to give you the humanity of this character, which sets up everything that we need to know going into the next two movies. And then that fact gives us what we need in The Dark Knight and gives us the humanity to where Christopher Nolan can just kind of jump right into the movie.
Yeah, I have written in my notes that this is a very personal movie, and for a lot of the movie, I think it feels very small. It feels like it's about Bruce Wayne, and I think it slowly expands. I mean, at the end, you have pretty high stakes with Gotham and Gotham and the hallucinogenic drugs and everything and the vaporizer, but all that it just, like you were saying, Cam, it really is a Bruce Wayne movie. It's very, very personal, very specific to him. You see his relationship with Rachel, and you kind of see the connection that they have there, and you see how he's so personally connected to what he's doing, to the struggle of his city.
One thing I love about this entire franchise is just kind of how you said, Trevor, is how intimate it is. We're never faced with the villain being a giant monster or some earth-ending machine. At the most, only a couple hundred lives are, you know, in the balance at a time. And I think that really makes the film a lot stronger. It makes it more personal, makes it, gives it more heart. You know, you get invested in these characters. Everyone's able to have their own character arc, and the resolution usually ties all of those character arcs together because it's such an intimate stakes.
So one of the things that's fascinating to me about this movie is the fact that Christopher Nolan kind of takes a risk and puts in three villains. You have Falcone, you have Scarecrow, and you have Ra's al Ghul. Each of them representing something different about Bruce Wayne and something different about his life. And they really kind of come to show the past, present, and future of Wayne, in that Falcone is the past. He's the one who robbed Bruce of his childhood. He's the one who took his parents away from him at an early age, essentially through Joe Chill. And then you have Scarecrow, who's his present. He's right in front of him. He's almost an equal. He gets his origin, just how Bruce gets his origin in this movie. And then you have Ra's, who is the future of what Bruce Wayne could be if he had stuck with the League of Shadows. And he is the future of what Gotham will be if Bruce can't defeat the League of Shadows at the end of this movie.
I think these villains are perfect for this film. Because, like you said, it establishes the character. And while I do agree that a good antagonist makes you love the protagonist more, I think the theme of the antagonist has to line up with the protagonist in some way, which we'll talk more about in The Dark Knight with the Joker. But like you said, each one of these characters represents something different, and it's setting up the character arc of Bruce Wayne and Batman, because while they are one person, they are two characters, and having this mix of villains really sets that up. I wish we got to spend more time with Scarecrow, because I think he's such a fascinating character in kind of like the comic books and previous films, cartoon, whatever. But going with Falcone and Ra's al Ghul, I think, is the perfect combination. And then introducing the fear tactic stuff with Scarecrow, and it just ties it up in a nice little bow.
Yeah, I think it works. I think that there are comic book films that suffer from too many villains. I think the reason why these work is kind of what you're getting at with the past, present, future thing. There's also, so they're intertwined in his life in such a way that just makes sense. The way that the characters and the villains are introduced is really what ties everything together. But really, I think the most interesting, I know Scarecrow is interesting kind of in and of himself and kind of as a solo character. I think Ra's al Ghul and the idea of the League of Shadows is really interesting. Because a lot of times we have villains who know that they're evil and have a certain thing they want to do. But the League of Shadows and Ra's see themselves as doing something good. They see Gotham as this like terrible place that's beyond saving, so that they're doing a favor almost. They're doing the right thing by destroying the city and creating mayhem. I think that's an interesting kind of ethical, moral take on for a villain to have. And I think it adds some depth to the whole story, instead of just saying like, we want to kill all these people and take over the world. But there's sort of a purpose behind it that like sort of makes sense in a terrible, terrible way.
So yeah, that's a great, great point about Ra's and his motivations. Going back to Scarecrow though, Christopher Nolan's kind of always had this thing where he says that all of his movies can be summed up, the theme of them at least can be summed up in one word. And it's interesting that if you look at all three of these movies, the theme of these movies directly correlates to the main, or not necessarily the main, because in this movie it's a little bit different, but it correlates to the villain. So in this movie, if you look at the theme is fear. And that's something that Bruce struggles with in the movie. He's afraid of what he could be. He's afraid of, I mean, he's literally afraid of the Scarecrow. This idea of fear kind of permeates through the entire movie until the end, when he finally, I feel like, comes into that role. And that's such a powerful thing, to put an idea of fear at the center of a superhero movie. That's not something that you always think, because we watch superheroes and we think, oh, they're these big, tough, strong guys that they don't need help. They've got this. And so for the main idea of the movie to literally be fear, that's so, so stinking powerful. Do you guys have any other thoughts on this movie, though, before we go to our MVPs of the movie?
I want to point out, and this will go to my MVP, I guess, just how visually different this movie is than any other comic book movie. And is, you know, we can also kind of blame it why the DCU looks so ugly now. But it is, like, Wally Pfister and Christopher Nolan bringing this unique, gritty, realistic take on this character, which works, like, because the character calls for it, was just huge. Like, if you look at all the past Batman films until this one, it was all super campy, neon colors, just super 80s and 90s. And this film, you know, while it may be a little dated in 20 or 30 years, it's gonna be timeless, just because they grounded it in reality.
Yeah, that's such a great, and I think that's such a simple thing, Jake. But what you're pointing out there is something that sets up the entire series in a way that sets it apart from every other comic book series out there. The only other thing that I want to talk about is Katie Holmes. When was the last time you guys watched this movie?
It's been a little while for me.
Yeah, same. I was watching some clips today just to refresh my memory. But honestly, like, both her and Maggie Gyllenhaal, like, I don't really care about the Bruce Rachel relationship thing. I don't know. But that also means that I can't really tell you who I think is better, because I don't really care.
For me, this movie is amazing. It's a 9 out of 10. But one of the things that stops it from being a 10 out of 10 is Katie Holmes. She's just terrible in this movie. I think that's the one mistake Christopher Nolan made in this movie, is that he cast her. And there are a couple other mistakes as far as dialogue and delivery of certain lines. But I think Katie Holmes is by far way below acting of the rest of the cast when you look at who you have in there. But let's go ahead and get to our MVPs. Or Trevor, you have a couple other things?
I have a couple just small notes that I think are hilarious. One, Tom Wilkinson and Rutger Hauer in this movie, and it's like not a big deal at all. They're like two like sort of legends of screen acting, and they're just kind of like there as regular old people. I think that's just kind of an interesting thing, that the way that goes. Another thing is, shoot, where was it on my notes? Something that's like really key to the Batman mythology and everything is the Batmobile, and what they did with the Tumbler in this, and I know it appears in the other movies as well, but it was just amazing. I mean, yeah, what they did from a technical standpoint to create the vehicle, to shoot the vehicle, and then just to add it into the mythology, and to be kind of a new thing that kind of takes on its own life, but also has its roots in the origins of the comic book. The Tumbler is awesome.
Well, that kind of goes to like what I was saying earlier, is like, it's real. Like, they made a real car, and it's practical. Like, it totally makes sense for it to be like that and look like that and drive like that. It's just the way they fleshed out this world is just incredible.
Yeah, it's definitely like saying it's a simple idea. Make all of this real. But the actual execution of it is insane when you get down to, okay, how do you translate this comic book character into a real life believable superhero on screen? So let's jump into our MVPs. These are either the actor, character, director, cast member moment in the movie that we feel is the best piece of this movie. So Jake, let's start off with you. What's your MVP of Batman Begins?
My MVP is, I mentioned him earlier, it's going to be Wally Pfister. I feel like the cinematography in this film really made it stand out. The way that they used practicals, the way that you know, they're playing with color theory to kind of influence mood. I just think that they did an incredible job with the visuals on this film, and the cinematographer works really close with the art director to kind of, like how I said, just make it grounded in reality. And I think that the production design, cinematographer, all that stuff, really underappreciated people that really contribute to the look, but also just the feel of the film.
It's funny, in doing research and getting ready for this podcast, I remembered Wally Pfister, and I went to IMDb and was like, what's that guy up to nowadays? Last thing he did was Transcendence with Johnny Depp back in 2014. Yeah. And he hasn't DP'd or directed anything since. I think that kind of just halted his career. And that's
a bummer.
It's frustrating, yeah, because he's a fantastic cinematographer, but he gave up on that, which I totally get. Like, most people get into Hollywood have ambitions of being a director, and so I fully get that, and I think he took an ambitious choice with Transcendence. It's a great idea, terrible execution, but I think it's sad that he hasn't gotten to work as a DP at all since then. All right, Trevor, what is your MVP of Batman Begins?
Man, MVP on this one was really hard for me. I feel like in some ways, every person, I mean, and the cast and crew kind of made this what it is. I don't know that any one person or area carries this thing. I think this is like a total cop-out. I think that Christopher Nolan is the MVP. I mean, just being able to take his wonderful abilities as a storyteller and giving new life to this story that's been told over and over and over again in so many different ways, and putting his own spin on it. And this is now the definitive interpretation of Batman, I think, is these films. I mean, the animated series is great. The Frank Miller graphic novels, the stuff is great. The Alan Moore is great, but this is now Batman. Batman is how we see him, as Christopher Nolan envisioned him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's accurate. My MVP for this first movie is what I'm calling the trio of Bruce Wayne's supporting actors, which in my eyes are Gary Oldman, Michael Caine, and Morgan Freeman. I think those three supporting characters do a world of good for this character in grounding Bruce, giving him heart, and reminding him of where he's come from to this point. The fact that Christopher Nolan got three of the greatest actors working today, between Gary Oldman, Michael Caine, and Morgan Freeman, to all be in this movie, one, is a miracle. Two, they all have a decent amount of screen time. And three, that screen time that they're actually given is worthwhile and actually values and makes the movie so much better because they're in it. It's just, it's magic.
And this is a comic book movie. Like,
yes,
now we have a ton of Oscar nominated actors trying to get comic book roles, but like, that was not the case at this time. And somehow he got these guys.
Michael Caine is just the freaking best.
Yeah.
He's just so great.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, it kills me that these guys, the fact that I'm 90% sure there's only one Oscar between the three of them. I'm pretty sure Morgan Freeman is the only one that's won an Oscar.
Wow.
The fact that Michael Caine and Gary Oldman haven't won an Oscar is a crime.
Yeah.
Trevor, are you checking for me?
I'm trying to
think. Has Morgan Freeman won one?
I want to say that surely Michael Caine has, but maybe he hasn't.
I'm pretty sure Michael Caine hasn't.
I think Morgan Freeman may have for Driving Miss Daisy.
He won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for Million Dollar Baby.
Oh.
He has nominations for Driving Miss Daisy, Shawshank, Invictus, and Street Smart. So they've all been nominated, but it's crazy to think there's only one Oscar between them. I mean, you can make an argument that those are three of the most underrated. I mean, not that they're underrated because everybody loves them, but that they haven't gotten the awards or full credit that they deserve, especially when it comes to this series.
I would say Gary Oldman is super underrated.
He's awesome.
Sirius Black. That's all you need to argue. Sirius Black. Like, oh my goodness. I remember when that, oh, okay, we're not going to get into Harry Potter. We'll do that whenever Fantastic Beasts
different episode. Different episode.
That's a conversation for another friend.
I was about to say it.
I know.
You got it. That's good.
Alrighty. So we're going to move on to The Dark Knight. This.
The Ohio number University.
The Ohio State. Number four on IMDb's top movies of all time behind Shawshank Redemption, Godfather 1, and Godfather 2. It's one of the highest rated movies of all time. It's one of the most loved movies of all time. And if I'm being 100% honest, in my opinion, has the greatest, single greatest acting performance of all time. There is nothing, I think when we get to the end of this, I'm going to guess that all of us have some form of the Joker as our MVP, but the tragedy behind this role is mind-blowing. It shocks me still to this day. But the product that comes out of it is the most gut-wrenching, realistic role that shouldn't be realistic in any way. A guy that wears makeup that's there's no reason this role should be realistic, but somehow Heath Ledger has taken this role that's super comic booky and made it into the most terrifying thing I've ever seen on screen. It's the most believable villain. It's like, what makes this so good is that you could actually picture some crazy lunatic doing this exact same thing. And it's mind-blowing what he went through to get to the place to this, and the fact that because of this role, we lost such a great talent as Heath Ledger. I'm at a loss when I watch this movie as far as what is this character, like, what would this movie be without Heath Ledger in this role? I don't think anybody else would have given as great of a performance as he did. And that's only such a small part, not a small part. He's a huge part of this movie, but that's such a small part of what this movie is, and that he's what I'm going to guess the only comic book character to ever win an Oscar. I check me if I'm wrong, but the fact that he won an Oscar for this is amazing. He's perfect in this movie. Every single thing he does in this movie is perfect. The first time I went to go see this movie, I completely forgot anything that happened in this movie outside of Heath Ledger, because every time he was off screen, I was waiting for him to come back on screen. He commands every single scene he's in. I keep using the word mind-blowing. It is mind-blowing how amazing Heath Ledger's Joker is in this movie. And Jake, what are your thoughts on The Dark Knight? I'm pretty sure both of you guys had this in your top 10, right?
This is my favorite film of all time.
Okay.
I think it was my number 3, 2, 3, 4, somewhere in there.
Alrighty. So Jake, what are your general thoughts on The Dark Knight?
General thoughts? I mean, you basically nailed it. This is the number 4 highest rated movie of all time on IMDb. And it's a comic book movie. It's about Batman. Like, what the F, guys? This is, not only do I love Batman, and he's always been my favorite comic book character, but I love Christopher Nolan's filmmaking style. And this is both of those things at its absolute best. And, you know, it really just, like you said, is perfect. Like, it's perfectly paced. The score is amazing. All of the actors, especially Heath Ledger, but every single actor in this film brings their A game. The script is incredible. This movie is, I think, about 2 hours and 20 minutes or whatever.
2:32.
Maybe a little less. I don't remember exactly. But there were multiple times in this film where it could have ended and I would have been satisfied. And then I was like, there's another 45 minutes. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? This movie is just incredible. And the themes that it tackles and the character developments and the character arc and where we're left at the end of this film. I'll get more into that in a little bit, but general thoughts, this is a perfect movie. This is a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece of storytelling. It's the pacing is perfect. I kind of wrote down, like we said, Jake, so many like fake endings. You're like, you know, that could have been like the end of the movie, and okay, sure, but it kept going and it kept getting better.
Yeah,
it's the way that Nolan tells the story in these little episodes. There's like, it's like almost like five or six kind of little stories sewn together. And the way that it works, it's just a masterpiece. It's like you said, it's Nolan at his best, it's Batman at his best. We get to see the truest nature of Batman being exactly what he needs to be, not what he thinks he should be, not what he set out to be, but what he needs to be at that time is who he is throughout this film. And not only at the end, especially at the end, but also throughout this film, he does what he needs to. He does what the moment calls for. And that's really what makes Batman a great character. He doesn't rely on the same powers over and over again. He doesn't do the same move over and over again. His humanity is what fuels who he is. And we see that on display throughout the entirety of this film. And I think that the humanity of people and it is really kind of the biggest theme here too.
I don't want to keep getting into the Joker, but there's so many moments. Like, I feel like we could spend this entire podcast just talking about the Joker. The one scene that I do want to highlight, though, is that very first introductory scene with the Joker where he robs the bank and has laid out this amazing plan, which if you watch this scene, it's insane to think about how detailed it is, from the fact that the guys up on the roof talk about the number that's dialed. It's not the police number. It's a different number. And you find out later it's a mob number, and he knows that the police won't be called right away, so he has more time to rob this bank. From that to how he has directed every single person to kill the next person until there's nobody left. It's amazing to think that this is how movies should be kicked off, and it's not how every movie's kicked off. Like, the fact that Nolan takes this movie and goes, hey, okay, I'm not going to give you much introduction whatsoever. I'm just going to kick it off with this scene where I introduce the Joker, and then I'll get to the rest of the movie and I'll explain things later on. It's how he later does the Prestige, or I guess Prestige came before this, but it's how he does Inception. It's how he does The Dark Knight Rises. It's how he's pretty much done every single movie since then. And a lot of people have tried to copy it, but nobody's done it. Not even Christopher Nolan's done it as good as he does it here in introducing this character. So, a couple of things I want to get to. What's your favorite moment from this movie? Jake, let's start with you.
My favorite single scene from this movie is the interrogation scene, for a lot of reasons. But it is perfect filmmaking. It's perfect dialogue. It's perfect character conflict. It's perfect character development. It's also perfect cinematography. Like, we're constantly crossing the 180 degree line between characters as morality is being flipped. Like, the camera is moving in a way that's confusing us because we are now in the minds of the Batman and in the mind of Joker, confused, trying to figure each other out. And then the scales tip and essentially, like, Batman loses in that situation. It's perfect filmmaking. There are so many scenes in this film that are just, they could be their own little short films, and I would have been happy if credits had rolled after the bank scene, you know. So it's just wonderful. It's great.
Yeah, my I love the bank scene almost enough for it to be my favorite moment. The hilarious thing is that it's a prologue that's better than the climax of like 95% of movies. including bank heist movies. It's better than some bank heist movies.
Wow.
But I think my favorite moment, because it gets to the essence of maybe the key theme of this film, is the two, when the Joker has the two fairies rigged to explode and the people are on there debating whether or not they should blow up the other fairy and just kind of what goes on there. And it's interspersed with other action, which kind of lessens the intensity of it a little bit, but what Nolan is able to do 2 hours into a film with no characters that have existed in the film before this, and still it's incredibly compelling. The very nature of humanity is at stake in this scene. Do we think so much of ourselves that we're going to kill these other people just because it's not going to kill us? Do we even trust this crazy guy who says these things? Like who even knows? It's the crux of this film, and what makes the Joker so interesting is that he designs these impossible ethical decisions for characters to face. There's no way to make a right decision in all of these situations. And in some situations, the characters end up having to do nothing. They end up making a choice that just goes poorly because something was going to the way everything was designed. But I think that scene with the two fairies really is so gut-wrenching, especially for having no characters that are recognizable in it, really.
I think that's what makes this movie so powerful, is that it does wrestle with these ethical questions that so many movies are afraid, even non-superhero movies are afraid to dig into, whether it's, okay, do I save the love of my life, or do I save the White Knight in Harvey Dent, who is making this city a better place? And that's what makes this movie so compelling, is that at every level of the movie, there's a ethical question. There's a moment where Batman has to choose something, and it makes these stakes feel realistic because there is so much on the line.
I think this is a good segue into my nerdiness that's about to erupt from my mouth. So what I love about this film so much is, you know, every film that is a successful and impactful film has a theme that is core to the story. And I think this gets lost a lot in the conversation about this film, because people talk about the Joker, talk about Batman, but they're not talking about the overarching theme, which is identity. And in this movie, you have the three main characters. You have Batman / Bruce Wayne, you have the Joker, and you have Harvey Dent. And each one of them represent a different theme, a different identity, a different persona. You know, they are a symbol. And the conflict occurs when these identities clash against each other, and their decisions are based on the other people's identities. And like, the Joker's main goal is to strip away Batman's identity. Like, for the majority of the film, he's like, I'll stop if you just take off your mask, you know? And the entire movie is around that theme of who you are, how you're seen, and how you want to be seen, your identity. And at 90 minutes into the film, where most movies end, we have the interrogation scene, and the Joker wins. Batman loses control. He loses his identity. The Batman has lost, you know? But Rachel dies, spoiler. And at that moment, like, Bruce Wayne dies. Like, at that moment, Bruce dies, and Batman becomes the Dark Knight. And this just goes on forever in circles of just, like, Harvey Dent is compromising his identity by choosing to face the Joker and embrace the Joker's identity, and the Joker flips. Like, it's just insane how much this goes into circles, and how perfect Christopher Nolan uses this film at every uses this theme at every turn in this film. And it's just perfect. It's perfect.
Those that, like, you, Jake, you're 100% right. Those those questions of identity are what give this movie stakes. It's what makes this movie actually interesting in that there's constantly consequences for the actions. It's not like, oh, like Christopher Nolan so easily could have made Batman choose Harvey Dent or Maggie, whichever one, not Maggie Gyllenhaal, Rachel. Okay, there we go. Could have had her him choose whichever one, and then had the cops save the other one, and then the Joker's plan is foiled. But there's real consequences when he does something. When Batman does something one way, there's a consequence the other way. At the end of the movie, when he decides to essentially kill Harvey Dent in a way, there are consequences for that that haunt him, as we see into the next movie, for 8 years where Batman doesn't make an appearance. There are actions and there are consequences that follow those that are real-world consequences and aren't these mystical consequences that happen in so many movies. What Christopher Nolan does here is he brings weight to these characters. And I think that's what makes this movie so good, is that it's not afraid to shy away from, one, not only killing somebody, but killing them in a way that has consequences outside of just this movie. I mean, you feel the weight of Rachel dying in the next movie as well. Do you guys have anything else that you... I mean, I know we could talk about this movie for like 30 more minutes. Probably 30, an hour, 2 hours, yeah. 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, 800 hours. But is there any other things that you guys wanted to add before we go on to our MVPs?
Yeah, I have two kind of small notes to add as far as we talked about this being a masterpiece of storytelling. I think a gutsy move kind of that Nolan does here is gives you no origin whatsoever for the Joker. Like, you have no idea who he is, where he came from, why he's like this. And that makes him like even more terrifying when you don't understand what his motivations are. You have no idea. You're like, he's just this person who presumably for the last 10 years or something has been planning this series of crazy chaos inducing actions and events.
Yeah.
So I think that's crazy. The other thing is that this is a really intense movie that is broken up perfectly by the comic relief from Michael Caine. And it's not enough to be like silly or to lose focus, but it lets you breathe for just a second. Like one of the more in one of the more intense moments of the movie, he brings out the, like, you know, like, I don't want to do this, but I did tell you so, like that whole deal. And like, it's just, his delivery is perfect. He's a funny actor, but it's just those just perfectly timed moments of comic relief to take the edge off, to not make this like a crazy movie that makes you lose your mind because you never breathe and your heart never stops.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Caine he's a legend. But kind of how I was saying with like, this film is perfect. It really is. And all the points on identity, the points on character, like, you watch this film, and I've read a lot of books about like storytelling, screenwriting, character development, how to build protagonists, antagonists, whatever. Literally every character, every beat in this film is exactly where it needs to be. You could watch, like, just watch this movie over and over and over, and you will have gone to film school. like, seriously. It's my favorite film. I love this movie.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch this movie, and even some of the down moments, like when Bruce shows up to dinner with the Russian ballerina and Harvey and Rachel are there, even the down moments like that are normally like, all right, let's get back to the movie, are interesting and serve the plot. It's so tight in how it's edited. The last couple things I want to touch on are, one, at any given moment in this movie, Christopher Nolan's juggling like, oh, how many is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 different pieces that he's juggling. I mean, between Batman, Bruce Wayne, the Joker, Rachel, Harvey Dent, crime syndicate, as far as in the beginning of the movie, what Gordon's trying to take down, and then also Commissioner Gordon, and then Bruce's relationship with his mentors as far as Morgan Freeman, Lucius Fox, and Michael Caine's Alfred. There are so many pieces that he's juggling, and at any time in the movie where you're going, wait, where did that character go? As soon as you start to think that, or as soon as you have a question about anything in the movie, Christopher Nolan either answers that or cuts to that person. He is inside the mind of the viewers in this going, okay, at this second, we need to cut to this because they're going to be wondering about this. Or at this second, we need to answer this because they're going to be wondering. It's the editing in this movie, I can't say it enough, is absolutely 100% perfect. I didn't give this movie enough credit in the past. I think watching it again, it may be in my top 10 now. I don't know. It's hard to assess, but it's so deserving of everything it's given. It changed the culture of movies. I mean, the Oscars now are more than five movies because this movie wasn't included in the best pictures. And so now it's that murky anywhere between 5 and 10, but they have to receive 75% of the votes or whatever it is now that they've changed it to this year. Stupid rules. But this movie changed culture. It changed awards. It changed storytelling. It changed movies. This movie permeated through everything in society. And I think that's a bigger tell of how perfect this movie is than anything else. So let's get to our MVPs. Trevor, let's start with you. What's your MVP of this movie?
The film would not be what it is without Heath Ledger. But I did a kind of a cop out the first one, so I'm going to go a little different way. I think my MVP in this is the character of Batman and the persona of Batman really becoming what it needs to be. As I talked about, just the end there when Jim Gordon's son says, "Why is he running?" And he says, "Because we have to chase him." Like, that to me is the perfect encapsulation of what the character of Batman is. Like, Batman is someone who's here for the good of the city. He's here for the people. He's here so that things don't happen to the other kids in the city like what happened to him. And even the backstory growing on that with his parents being so involved with the city and trying to make it a better place and being good people, all of those things coming into him being exactly what he needs to be. And in some ways, the Joker is kind of what pushes him all the way to that. Like, we had the hiccups, you know, like we say in the interrogation scene, he kind of loses it a little bit, but he still, at the end, gets to the true essence of who the character is.
Yeah, mine is going to be a little controversial. Unless, Cameron, were you not going to say Heath Ledger? Because if you're not going to say Heath Ledger, then I have to say Heath Ledger.
I mean, I think we can all agree that Heath Ledger is by far the best part of this movie, but I had a specific moment with Heath Ledger. But yeah, Jake, what was your...
Well, that counts. That counts as Heath Ledger then.
Okay.
mine is surprisingly... Aaron Eckhart.
No!
It's his best work.
This is really his only good work.
I dare you to name another good thing that he's in.
I can't.
Thank you for smoking is kind of funny.
Yeah, but even that's like not great because of him. It's great because of the writing, and he even falters at points with how he delivers lines in it.
Well, I mean, like, I, Frankenstein... Guys, have you seen that? I mean,
it's look, that movie's movie gold, okay?
I know it's controversial, but I really think he is perfect for this role. Like, he is the White Knight, and he is able to play that Two-Face character really well. I think this was the role he was born to play, and he really did it, you know? And, like, now we can just all forget about him, so it's fine.
He's got a very punchable face, which is important for that character to have.
Very true. Very true.
That's a good way to phrase it, Trevor.
I think he did a good job. My co-MVP, I guess, would be Gary Oldman, because Jim Gordon's just amazing in this film. So
yeah, I think as far as Gary Oldman goes, this is his best Gary Oldman-ing of a role. okay, I think we can all agree Heath Ledger's fantastic in this movie. And I didn't want to... just say Heath Ledger because I wanted to give a specific moment though. And I wrestle between two. The first one, so I ended up on one, but I just want to give a little bit of credit to the first one. The first one's when there's that first scene where he's talking to all the mob bosses and the guy tells him he's crazy. And it's a simple line where he just goes, "I'm not." And it's this, like, how he delivers this line of, like, he truly believes he isn't crazy. Ugh. He's just like, oh, there's so much weight to that. Like, when he emphasizes that T, I've never been so shook by a letter. And that movie, I mean, it's like, yes, you're not crazy. Like, it's insane. But my favorite part of this entire movie, the MVP, is going to go to the scene where the Joker is walking out of the hospital. So good. You guys know this scene. He had just talked to Harvey. He just put the gun to his head, told Harvey to flip the coin when Harvey fully kind of becomes Two-Face, and he's walking out of the hospital, and this is when he's going to fully blow up the hospital. So he walks away, pushes the button, and the hospital kind of half blows up. And then he turns around to the hospital, puts his arms up as almost like a, what happened? And then the rest of it blows up and he runs off. That's a fully unscripted moment. The bombs didn't go off as they were supposed to. And for Heath Ledger to have the presence of mind in that moment to go, how can I turn, like, how would the Joker react to his bomb not going off how it should be? And gives that like, there's so, like, that, I think that's the, that's this movie in a nutshell in that moment, is that Heath Ledger is so in character that even when something goes wrong, he plays off of it in a way that's so believable that we all just buy into it and go, yeah, that's how it was written.
It's so good.
It's perfect.
It's the worst I've ever felt for laughing in a movie, I think.
Another part of that scene that I love that people don't usually notice is when he leaves Harvey Dent's room, he puts Purell on his hands.
And yes.
Like, wipes yes. his hands when he's like licking his lips weirdly and walking. It's amazing.
Oh, so good. Man. So good. Alrighty. Well, here we are. The final movie in the Dark Knight trilogy. The Dark Knight Rises. And by far my least favorite Christopher Nolan movie that he has ever released. Okay, so let's talk about a couple things before we actually get to our general thoughts of the movie. I'm pretty sure the three of us saw this movie in Waco together. Am I right?
Yeah.
I think that's correct, yes.
Okay. Jake and Trevor can attest to this, but I had so much hype in going to see this movie. I talked about it for months leading up to it. I'm pretty sure I made Jake super mad at one point about talking just about when tickets were going on sale. Like, I think I was overly hyped for this movie. And most times that leads to one of two things with me. Either I end up hating the movie because I've built it up so much in my head and I have this idea of what it's going to be. Or two, I blindly love a movie just because of whatever it is. When this movie finished, I was in tears out of joy for this series. And boy, was I wrong. This movie is a train wreck. And not a train wreck. It's,
I think,
not
you're
great.
Being a little harsh.
The plot is a train wreck. The film is technically just as good as the other films. Or not just as good, but in the area. It's the plot that has the issues.
The first two times I saw it, so one was we all went to go see it at midnight in Waco. The next time was the next day we went and drove up to Fort Worth and saw it on an IMAX screen there. And I don't think I saw it again in theaters. I think the next time I saw it was on home video. I think I had time to come down from the actual movie and was actually going to analyze it like I normally do. And it's not a train wreck. I take that back, but it is not worth the credit or to be in the same realm as the other two movies in this series. For the first 100, what did I clock it at? 115 minutes. It is a great movie. There's a couple of things that are frustrating, like the fact that the first scene of the movie is Gordon talking about how he believes in Harvey Dent, and then we cut to Bane's introduction in the plane, which is a great introduction once again, or how Joseph Gordon-Levitt knows that Batman, or that Bruce Wayne is Batman simply from the hidden look of anger on his face. There are things that early in the first 115 minutes of this movie that aren't great, but you can kind of throw them aside because the rest of it is so good. The second that we realize that Bane has been camping under the Wayne Enterprises armory is where I just kind of lose it. Like, you mean to tell me that for all this technology, they can't tell you that an evil syndicate has been underneath them for the past couple months plotting something? Like, how does that even happen? It's up until, and even like, I feel like even that I could forgive. The whole back breaking, this sounds so mean. I was so pumped about that because that's how that fight should go in the comics. But after that, things just fall apart, and there's plot hole after plot hole. There's illogical move after illogical move. There's the rest of it's just a sloppy mess where they, it's almost like a slow, boring montage of jumping from set piece or like scene to scene and trying to get through this 5 months of bomb decay so that we can get to the end battle where the bomb is slowly ticking. What are your guys' thoughts on this movie? I'm honestly curious. I don't know if we've ever really talked about this movie too much, but yeah. Jake, what are your initial thoughts?
Initial thoughts? I agree. I mean, this is definitely the weakest of the three. I think...
But do you hate it?
It's not... No, I don't hate it. It's not good. It's not bad. It gets better over time, I think, if, like... We'll get into this more, but I think if you look at the film in a certain way, it makes it better, which that shouldn't be the case, but whatever. I think the biggest problem is that I just don't think this movie should have existed in the first place. And I don't know if it was even supposed to, because like, I don't know if Christopher Nolan originally had the three film arc written up or not. I should have looked that up, but,
Cameron's he originally nodding, did, yes. But it involved the third movie did involve the Joker, and so that was obviously drastically changed once
gotcha.
Heath Ledger had passed.
Gotcha. Well, you can definitely feel that based on the way this movie ended up. I'm just kind of like bleh on it, you know, which is such a bummer because The Dark Knight is just so incredible. And I think that's why there's such backlash, is because we go from literally a perfect film to a, honestly, above average comic book movie. But I mean, the bar was set so high, and we fell so far, but those are my general thoughts. Trevor.
Yeah. I'll preface everything I say about this film. I still only seen it once. I own it, so I need to watch it again. But so that one experience, which was awesome, is really my only recollection of it. Now, of course, I mean, I've read stuff about it. I've seen parts and pieces of it since then. I think that this film is almost a perfect theater going experience. I think that when you watch it in the theater, especially like if you've just watched The Dark Knight recently and coming on that high, like I think it kind of it doesn't reach The Dark Knight, of course, but it continues that flow, and it's an entertaining film. I think it's better than most of the Marvel movies, maybe not all the Marvel movies, but better than most of them. It definitely has some issues. The biggest issues are like I said, plot issues. But I think I think if this was the only film made, if we just like we're making Batman like a later in life Batman and this was the story, I think we'd be saying, oh, that was pretty good. You know, like that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But after two just truly great films, it does leave a little bit to be desired, even though it has those same acting performances, the same great cast. I mean, I think Tom Hardy is good in it. I think Anne Hathaway is really good in it. I think what they have to do isn't as good as the other films.
Hardy's Bane and Hathaway's Catwoman are by far two of the best pieces of this movie, which is amazing to me that Christopher Nolan goes 3 for 3 as far as movie villains go, between Ra's al Ghul / Scarecrow being the main villain, Joker, and Bane. All three of them are perfectly fitting for the movie that they're in. And I love Bane in this movie. I love Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy's about to play Venom in the Sony Pictures movie, which is weird. I don't fully understand that, but Tom Hardy's fantastic. I'll go see anything that he's in, so hats off to you, Tom Hardy. Hathaway's fantastic. I hate that I'm going to do this. I've said it before in this podcast. I go into every movie wanting to love it, and I even after not liking a movie, sometimes we'll watch it again going, did I miss something? Is that I could love it? This movie has so many plot holes, and it's so frustrating. I'm going to run through them. Stop me on any ones that you guys want to talk about, because I watched this today. And it wasn't as... So I think the first two times I watched it, I loved it. The next couple times I watched it, I hated it. today I was, it's like a C minus D plus to me. It's not, it's okay. It's fine. It's mediocre. Okay. You mean to tell me that their first thought when everybody, or when Bane starts taking over, is not like, okay, let's flood this bomb that we have. They're just going to let the bomb go, whatever, fine. Their next thought is, let's send every cop we have underground to battle these. Let's send 3,000 cops underground to battle Bane's army. That's a great idea. Let's send all of them underground, none of them up above ground so they can't escape, or any of them anywhere else in the city to do anything else in case he has any other plans. Let's send every
cop. And
they're
apparently all on duty as well.
Yes.
Like every cop is on duty at the same time.
On duty, underground. Then
some serious overtime pay right there.
Then the mayor is at a football game while a major police operation is going on. He's just going to casually be at a football game. Great idea. Okay, there's a prison, Blackwater Prison, in the middle of the city. You mean to tell me that New York would have a prison in the middle of the city? Great idea, guys. I think that's a wonderful idea. That's where we should keep thousands of terrible people just in case somebody ever comes to have an army that wants an evil army. Great, well, great idea. What? Nope. Terrible. Okay. The way to fix a broken backbone / vertebrae / paralysis is that you're going to dangle somebody with a rope and then punch the vertebrae back in. Punch the vertebrae back in, I'll give you that. But you're going to dangle him with some rope in the air? Nuh-uh. Then he has a hallucination.
People can dangle from ropes.
And fix paralysis?
Hey, I think that Eastern medicine. I don't know.
The weirder part there is how quickly it happens for me. Not it does.
It happens over three months.
But it does happen quickly.
Okay. Ra's al Ghul. Bruce Wayne hallucinates Ra's al Ghul and has his hallucination tell him that the child of Ra's al Ghul is the bad guy. Okay, so you mean to tell me that a hallucination is a key element of this movie? Yes, he tries to tell him that Bane is his heir, but really it's Talia. It's still the same thing in my head. Okay, what's the government doing during these 5 months to get people out? You mean to tell me that we just have a city the size of New York under martial law from evil terrorists for 5 months? Really? Okay, how does Bruce Wayne get back to Gotham from the pit? Then Bane dies by a Batmobile. Like, you have this serious villain who just dies by Batmobile instead of actually being defeated. Major cop-out. Then, the overall big part of the movie, the fact that we have a bomb that goes off that has a 6-mile radius, and somehow Bruce Wayne gets away from it, and somehow the city isn't destroyed at all. If you do research on what a 4-megaton bomb, if you do research on what that bomb would actually do, it has like a 15-mile burn radius. There's no way that ship's 15 miles out. There's no way that Batman made it out of there. Like, that's the part that frustrates me the most, is that instead of just killing off this character, which is the logical consequence to these actions, gives the character the right ending that he said that Nolan has done in the past two movies. There are logical actions that are made, and there are consequences that come with those. That at the end of this all, Bruce Wayne lives because, well, we need to have a happy ending and we can't kill the main character. That's
what if the last part is not real? Like, what if the epilogue is like a dream sequence or something like that? Because,
like a hallucination?
Have you guys heard that theory?
Yeah, like the Inception theory that Michael Caine is actually like hoping to see Bruce there, and who knows if he's really there.
Right, but it's not actually, he's not actually seeing Bruce. It's someone who maybe looks like Bruce. Well, I mean, that does, if that's the case, then that does kind of fix the issues as far as the atomic bomb go.
But you realize then that we're having to come up with theories as to why this sequence works instead of it just working on its own. Like, are there any scenes in The Dark Knight where you're like, okay, I have this theory as to why this works? No, you're going, this works because of X, Y, and Z that's happened, or because of straight up logic of, if this happens, then this is the consequence for that. We're not having to come up with theories for any of these other movies.
He did fix the autopilot. He snuck in and fixed the autopilot.
That's true.
The same time, the last time they show him in the plane, they show him and then they cut to a sequence of the bomb and it's 5 seconds left. Okay, either he's not in the plane and that's just some weird shot that they've thrown in there, or he's in the plane with 5 seconds left and somehow still manages to be 5 seconds away from an exploding 4-megaton bomb and live. Like, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Give me one or the other.
I think that's a big problem with Christopher Nolan, is he always wants to have his cake and eat it too. Like, he does with this Inception. He does this with Interstellar in a way. Like, I think that's just kind of what he likes to do. And he's probably like laughing to himself, thinking like, all these podcasters are talking about what the real ending is. I got them, you know?
But that's the perfect thing with Inception, is that that is a conversation piece in a way where that it provokes intelligent conversation, and not like this where it's having to make theories so that the end of the movie makes sense, instead of making theories because the movie has given us ideas that provoke intelligent conversation. It's in my head, the ending of this and the ending of Inception are like two completely different endings. The ending of Inception is exactly how that movie should have ended. The ending of this movie is exactly how it should have ended, up until the point where Michael Caine sees Bruce Wayne. If he had gone to that place, not seen him, but just like had this thought of like, even if he had just kind of like smirked and like they show like where he's looking at and there's nobody sitting there, like, I'm even fine with that, because it's this thought of, well, what if like he could be like, I guess it's the difference of giving us the answer versus letting us think about it. And the answer that they give us isn't what should have happened by consequences of.
I think we're nitpicking an ending here, but
it's the ending of arguably one of the biggest trilogies of all time, though. Like,
I know the ending doesn't bother me that much. I mean, the entire series, Batman is doing the impossible, and that's kind of part of the character, is through his genius and training, he's able to achieve the impossible. So who knows? But I think one thing that I want to touch on, kind of like what we talked about on The Dark Knight, is like the theme of this movie. For me, the theme is not as strong as The Dark Knight. But in terms of like the villain, I would say that the villain isn't Bane, or it's not Miranda. It's Bruce. It's Bruce's past. You know, the whole villain in this is Bruce's past. And the last film, the persona of Bruce essentially died. And in this film, Batman dies and Bruce is reborn. And I think that's a tough thing to do. And I think the film achieves that, like, not as well as it could have. But I definitely think that it achieves what it's set out to do, just not in the best way.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I will say my big thing on plot holes, and Cam, you cut out for a second, so I'm not sure if you touched on this, but the idea of this prison is very strange to me. Who is administering this prison? Like who's in charge? Who makes sure that everyone gets their food? That's very unclear. And like, why is Ra's al Ghul's daughter in the prison? Does he not know that she exists? If that's the case, then why would she ever find him and then work with him later? Like, there's so many questions regarding like her origin, how she gets in the prison. Now Bane is her protector. Did Ra's put her in the prison so that she could like learn about life or something and want to follow in his footsteps and figure it out? Like, those are like the big issues for me. Everything that surrounds this prison is a problem area for this film.
Yeah, I definitely, there's clearly a lot of problems with the prison scene and throughout the whole film and whatever. But like, question. So what do you guys think, like, what is the future of Batman at this point? Like, not this movie. I just mean like this series essentially established, like Trevor said, this is the epitome of Batman. And like, now we're trying to reboot Batman. Like, where do we see the character going from here?
I was initially pumped that Ben Affleck was taking over the role. He seems super unhappy in the role, though, which I think can be evidenced by the fact that he dropped out of directing it, which he credits as the fact that he wants to be able to focus on the character of Batman and Bruce Wayne. And so instead of giving his efforts as a director, he wants to focus on that. But that feels like such a cop-out to me, because he's acted in the four other movies that he's directed up until this point. I think he just doesn't want to have that movie on his resume of movies he's directed. I don't know what the future is. What's his name? The guy who did Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and... what's his name? I can't remember his name right now. He did Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. He's doing Rise of the Planet of the Apes, of the humanity, of the movies, of the...
Those titles are awful.
Those are good movies.
They're good movies. He's doing the next one. Matt Reeves, that's his name. I think we're in an interesting place with this series. I like the idea of an older Batman, but I don't know. Trevor, what are your thoughts?
I think that this may be the last time, well, for a very long time, that we see a Batman that exists in his own universe. Because the Nolan universe only works in a single superhero universe. These stories don't work if the Justice League exists in this world. And I think because of that, no one's going to try to do what he did. I think you can always kind of use the other heroes as a little bit of a cop-out in a lot of ways, and to make your story a little more interesting and a little more compelling, and to sell some more action figures. So I think we may see, we're going to see a new animated series every 10, 15 years or so, just because it's a great character. They're going to draw from each other. They're going to draw from the comics. It's going to continue just like any other comic, I think. But I think as far as cinematically, I don't know what we're going to see after these Justice League films. I don't think the character can indefinitely be in films every 5 years, because it's just not, the source material isn't there, and the depth of the universe is there, I guess, but at some point you're making a film of every single storyline in the comic, and it has to stop at some point.
But I mean, arguably you don't have to, you can go off comic and make movies. I think
that's not canon at that point.
I think the unfortunate reality of the new blockbuster world that we live in is that in order for studios to retain rights, they have to make a movie with a character every X amount of years. And so, unfortunately,
it's also Batman. And so it just like prints money. Like, until it doesn't make sense to make the movie, they're going to keep making the movie.
Yeah. So until the end of time, I guess we'll be getting new Batman movies. I don't see another reality to it. Unfortunately, that's just where it is.
I think every 10, 15 years, we're going to have these guys like Frank Miller, Alan Moore, who really show up and give something, some new depth, some new story to the characters. And I think that, I mean, a lot of those storylines that those two guys wrote, and a lot of the stuff from the 80s and early 90s, those showed up in these Nolan films.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of what the cycle is in a lot of ways.
Well, the only other thing I haven't talked about is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Does anybody have any thoughts on
I totally forgot he was in this movie.
You mean you forgot Robin was in this movie?
He's
Robin?
Yeah.
He's just fine and very regular, and that's what he's supposed to be, but the character just isn't that interesting.
Yeah.
We didn't need it.
It's super unnecessary.
Yeah, and the reveal of it at the end is the most shoehorned thing I've ever seen in a movie. You should use your real name more often. Robin. And then he just like smirks and walks off. It's like, okay.
I think that was Christopher Nolan playing a joke on people who complained about Robin not being in these films.
Yeah.
Still unfortunate, but let's go ahead and get to MVPs.
My MVP is going to be, this is more of a sixth man of the year award than an MVP. It's Cillian Murphy, you know, just making a random appearance as the people's judge. And he's an incredible actor, and he brings a lot to these films, and I think he's really underappreciated. He was almost Bruce Wayne. Like, he was, I think, the second in line if Christian Bale didn't take the part. And that would have been really fascinating. But I just think he's a super talented actor, and excited to see him and Nolan work together again for Dunkirk this summer. But that made me laugh when I was like, hey, it's Scarecrow.
It catches you off guard so much that you're like, wait, was that actually him?
Yeah.
Wait, he's in this movie? Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was fun. For me, the MVP in this movie is Anne Hathaway and Selena Kyle. Anne Hathaway is great almost always. She's fantastic. She plays this role really well. I think the Catwoman role is very interesting anyway, because it's kind of this good, bad, whatever suits her fancy at the time. And the idea, I don't know that we saw it really well, but the history of the character is that Bruce Wayne is like bizarrely enamored with her in so many ways, just because of the depth and the interest in her character. And I think that Anne Hathaway plays that pretty well. So I think that she's probably the most interesting character, and the most interesting kind of dynamic in this film is between the two of them.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway was my MVP of this movie as well. That first scene where Bruce kind of catches her in the act of stealing his mom's pearls, and she goes from this almost afraid of getting fired waitress to, like, in a moment, she just kind of like moves her shoulders a little bit and like leans her face down a little bit and says like, oops. And you're instantly like, she's Catwoman now. Okay. The way that she kind of plays that role is fantastic. So Anne Hathaway is my MVP of this movie as well. I almost wish we had more of these movies just so we could see more of her in this role, because she's kills it. She's just amazing in this. So that is all we have. I think we can all agree that the ranking of these movies, and you guys can stop me if I'm wrong, but the ranking of these movies is clearly Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises.
Yep.
Definitely. My final thought about these films and the trilogy as a whole is that while they are dark and gritty in a lot of ways, a lot darker than we've seen Batman before, they still manage to be optimistic and point to like a better path, a better way, a better life, a better city. So I think that the way Nolan balances those, and I think that Christian Bale is kind of the biggest personification of this. Somehow we've talked about these movies for over an hour and only said Christian Bale's name like five times. He's absolutely amazing.
He is amazing.
He was the perfect choice. He's fantastic in this role. And I think, like I said, he's the personification of that good versus evil, that dark versus light. This things suck right now, but we're gonna make them better. We're gonna move forward, kind of way. And I think that's kind of the overarching theme of the whole series.
That's an astute observation.
I would give the whole series 10 Michael Caine as Alfred wisdom nuggets out of 10.
That's the best ranking system I've heard of yet. So we're just going to all go with Jinx ranking system for this series. Alrighty. So that is our thoughts on the Dark Knight trilogy. We're going to end it with this week's content of the week. This is our piece of media that you should be checking out. Jake, what is your content of the week?
Mine is the graphic novel Batman The Long Halloween. If you haven't read this one yet, it is a fantastic graphic novel that doesn't get as much attention as The Dark Knight Returns, but I think it's just as good. The art by Tim Sale is incredible. The writer, Jeff Loeb, does an awesome job. And it's just new characters in the Batman universe, and really explores areas that this film series doesn't really tackle, but this really lines up with that universe that Nolan really explores in the film. Would highly recommend. Trevor, what about you?
Mine is something that I've mentioned a couple times, and it's Batman the Animated Series. It's on Amazon Prime, so all good. Four seasons, I believe. It's really good. It's got like the art is this like kind of Art Deco 30s-40s feeling, and it's really neat. Kind of the film noir kind of feel. And all along with that is an animated movie by the same producers called Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
So good.
Which is also very good. I mean, one really I mean, I don't even know if it was released in theaters, but one of the great animated movies that I've ever seen, really. It could work as a live-action script and would work on that level. It's very good.
Yeah.
So I guess to keep it on topic, those kind of things. Of course, the Frank Miller graphic novels as well, fantastic.
Good recommendations. All right, my recommendation of the week is my favorite Christopher Nolan movie, The Prestige. I already talked about this a little bit in our top 10 episode. I think it's his best movie as far as storytelling goes. It's concise, to the point, and gets roundabout ways of giving you the story in the most nonlinear fashion, but it all comes together perfectly in the end. So that is all we have for this week. I am Cameron Salina. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, at 321CamiTime. Jake, where can we find you?
You can find my work and my Instagram at jakebrown.tv. Trevor?
I am at TurboTrevor on Twitter and Instagram.
And as always, you can find Popcorn Optional at popcornoptional.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Popcorn Optional. If you like this, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. We would really appreciate that. And if you like it a whole lot, we would love it if you would recommend this to a friend. We've enjoyed being here tonight. We've loved getting to talk through these movies. And until next week, we will see you next week. Adios.
Bye.
Mm.